Hi, I'm Mel Majoros. I am a 2-year cancer survivor. My blog, The Cancer Warrior, is one of the top 10 breast cancer blogs, according to blogs.com. I'm here to bring a fresh, upbeat perspective to a topic that to some may seem scary. A positive mental attitude got me through my cancer, and I hope to share that with you. Going through cancer treatment is hard. Now think about when you're all done with cancer treatment, the chemo, the radiation, your insurance gets canceled. How do you pay for the medications that you need and that you didn't expect to be taking after cancer? Find out what Angela Hamilton, a breast cancer survivor, founder of Inner Tough Girls, a mom, a Pilates instructor, find out her story about how she paid for these medications, what happened to her after cancer, and her experience with RxAid on this Cancer Warrior podcast. Hi, Angela. How are you today?
I'm very well. Thank you, Mel. Thanks for having me, too. I know you get really humbled, and I want to say this before we even get started. You get really humbled in all the things that you do, but I just wanted to really thank you because you do talk about things that maybe somebody might not know about, and so thanks for even having the show and being the Cancer Warrior.
Oh, I'm blushing. Thank you. Well, tell us a little. Most people know about me, but tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I am a breast cancer survivor as well, and I was diagnosed in 2007. So I was 36 when I was actually diagnosed, and I won't go into like a big long history because I get bored of hearing the same old story again. But typical situation like you hear, you know, found a lump and went in. First, when they did the biopsy, it wasn't anything. They said, no, this isn't cancer. And then I went back a year later, and it was situation had changed, and it had spread to the lymph nodes and whatnot. So like most people, I said, I'm just going to have a little bit of cancer. I thought, well, I'm going to have a little bit of cancer. I will have some radiation, some surgery, maybe some chemo, and, you know, move on with life, and then kind of got whacked in the face with all of this, of what that really meant.
Exactly.
So it was, in the meantime, then we also found out that I was had the BRCA2 gene mutation.
I didn't know. And for our listeners, what is that?
Well, it is the, there are certain breast cancer gene mutations and ovarian cancer that kind of gives you a breakdown of the genes and that can just make you get cancer faster. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to get cancer. It doesn't really mean that you're not. It just means that you have the tendency to have more, to have that type of cancer. So I know that you've had those, the BRCA, it's technically BRCA2 and BRCA1.
Right.
On your show before. And I had never heard of it, quite honestly, before they brought it up. So in my family, when I started doing the background, there was a lot of, I'm asking the questions, you know, has anybody done this? And they're like, oh, yeah, so-and-so has had that. Like,
oh, no.
Okay, yeah. Like, oh, wow, well, that would have been nice to know. I feel like if I would have known a little bit earlier, I could have changed the course of my, when I had the lump originally. But,
right.
You know, but I didn't. And so moving forward with it, we felt like the most aggressive treatment was to go on and do you know, your rounds of chemotherapy, and I had a double mastectomy and did continue and have the hysterectomy as well so that the estrogen was really blocked. And
good.
To be quite honest, I'm a Pilates instructor, so I had some background of how to, you know, rehab injury and a little bit of nutrition background and, you know, felt like I was pretty healthy going into it. So all through my treatments and even surgeries, I felt really good about. I had really good days, you know. I was really stayed really positive and felt good. And it was just till I was finished where I was kind of felt like, okay, I'm done now. And
you and I have the same pretty much story right there. After you're done, I don't want to make it sound like they kind of kick you out, but that's what it kind of feels like. You're in this little like cocoon of healing, and then they're like, okay, back to the real world, and they don't really focus on that as much as they should.
Yeah, and, you know, when I started the Inner Tough Girl blog, it was really my own way of therapy, as getting through, as most cancer patients, and especially now, have blogs, and just a kind of way to communicate. For me, it was with my family too, because they were far away, and so this was more, it was more of a way of communicating. Then when I was finished with my treatments and finished with surgery, I was kind of like, well, now what do I do with this, you know, blog? What do I do now with it? And I was really, quite honestly, ready to go back and just focus on my Pilates, kind of pick up on my teaching career that I left to take care of this cancer thing, and go back. And it just kept on coming up. I mean, more and more people, as I continued into my healing process, more and more people would also speak up and go, hey, that happened to me. And, you know, I'd be like, wow, I'm having a really hard time with all this menopause and everything. And, hey, that's going on with me too. And so they said, don't stop the blog. You know, just keep on. It doesn't matter if you have cancer or not. You know, people just like to hear about the kind of daily life of, you know, what's going on. And so I said, okay. And a group of friends and family stepped up and they said, you know, we want to, as more and more people were coming to me, especially with Pilates, because once you, you know, as you know, once you have cancer, everybody kind of, you become the cancer person to go to.
Yeah, you do. Exactly. And I always want to say that I, you know, when people ask me questions, or especially when I do this podcast, I'm not a doctor, but I am happy to give my opinion on things.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's everything is so individual. And even when people ask my opinion now about, like, well, nutrition or anything like that, you know, I obviously refer to doctors first, because everything is so individualized. What's going to work for you isn't going to work, you know, necessarily for somebody else. But
right.
But the key point in what I do believe really is just sharing the information, because you never know what's going to work for one person or what's going to work for you. So you have to kind of keep on opening that door.
Exactly. Exactly.
What's going to work.
And I find I didn't really know about Facebook or Twitter or anything when I was going through treatment. I just did a regular, like the chat room blogs, like breastcancer.org, which is really good, and a few others. And it, wow, had I known about Facebook when I was going through treatment, I think it would have been a different experience.
Yeah. I mean, it's really opened up. Social media has really opened up the doors for people to come out and tell how they're feeling and to be open about it. And a lot of times, you know, you're kind of forced into this fake kind of happiness just because you're,
yeah,
you know, alive and here and everything. And yes, that's absolutely true. But, you know, there are days when you're just like, oh, okay, you know, is anybody else feeling this crazy?
Exactly.
So as especially families and going back to my kids with and my husband were looking at me like, okay, you're done with the cancer. Like, what? What is wrong with you? Aren't we supposed to be done with this now? And it's like a year later, and you're still tired, and you're still all of these things, and. It kind of, for me anyway, it brought on this whole other series of immune disorders.
Oh, like so, what did you?
Yeah, so like chronic Epstein-Barr, and which if you never heard of that, which I had never heard of that before, is just basically chronic mono.
Oh.
So at some point, it disrupts every chemotherapy, just disrupted all of this immune disorder in my body. And even though I was doing, felt like I was doing all the right things, there were still things that, you know, I was not feeling as well as I thought that I should have been feeling like.
Right. Yeah. I have the same issue. I have hypothyroidism, and actually my doctor kind of diagnosed it just by looking at me, but obviously she got a blood test to back it up, because it was June after I was all done with chemo and I was still so tired. And I remember having an appointment and just like laying on the exam table, like all tired. And she came in and she's like, you still shouldn't be this tired, like this long after your treatment's over. Cause I was done with treatment in March and radiation in May.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I have the same, well, not Epstein-Barr, but I have hypothyroidism. Yeah. If there's any disease that makes me tired, it's, you know, it'll just come to me, I'm sure.
What?
You know, it's like, what else
like
is
like magnet
there?
For all of this?
Yes, exactly.
Just tired diseases. That's what I feel like. I'm just the magnet for tired diseases. But yeah, it does disrupt your whole body chemistry. And I really underestimated what it could actually do to your immune system. Because, you know, there were, unfortunately, I was working and teaching Pilates, and still I was teaching this Tai Chi class that somebody asked me just randomly, because I've done some Tai Chi in the past. So somebody had just randomly asked me to do this Tai Chi class. I'm like, yeah, going through treatment. And, you know, it turned out to be one of the better things I could have done throughout my whole healing process.
Why is that?
This class, just in the way that I was moving, and, you know, I had to actually get out and do something, and it kept me moving, even though I didn't feel like that at the time. So, but I just wasn't feeling any better. And so when I went into the doctor, and, you know, all these things started coming up or whatever, and I was still kind of ticked off, quite honestly.
Yeah, I hear you.
Mm-hmm. I'm finished with this cancer thing. You know, can't I just be done with it? And I'd never taken any prescription drugs or even been in the hospital. I've never been sick. I mean, mm-hmm. nothing, you
oh,
know?
Yeah.
So when cancer came up, it was like everything thrown at once. And I remember looking in the medicine cabinet one day and being like, what has happened to me?
Yes, I know what you're saying.
You know, like, what is going on here? And, you know, they're needed. They're needed things for me to continue a good quality of life, to do the things that I want to do and have the energy and do that. So I had to change my thinking about that a little bit, too, and just kind of be at peace with that's how it is for right now. These are the things that are helping me to get better. And, yes, I can do things like exercise and diet and,
right.
you know, other things. But these were ultimately the things that were helping increase my quality of life.
Now, the video that you did, you talked about your medication costs like $1,000 a month or something.
Yes. Well, yeah. So we were fortunate again to have insurance as I was going through treatment. So
right.
it was through my husband's insurance. And in the meantime, between all this happened, his company had just closed and quit. I mean, not quit, but I mean, they closed down.
Yeah.
So they weren't obligated to offer COBRA insurance.
Oh, my gosh.
So we were, which for my husband, my family, they're fine. You know, they got picked up by an insurance company, no problem. And I kept on trying to get picked up, obviously, and nobody was like trying. I get halfway into the conversation, and they're like, oh, sorry, can't take it, you know, we can't take you at this time. And,
right.
you know, it was really stressing me out, because I kept on thinking, you know, how am I started to feel the effects of the withdrawal symptoms of all of the
right.
medication.
And it's never good to do that off your, you know, off your meds without talking to your doctor either.
Oh my gosh, it's awful. And I also say too, now my doctor was very good in that they, you know, were trying to help me and trying to find some samples just to
mm-hmm.
kind of get through until I could find something else. But finally, my husband was like, "Just go and get the prescriptions. You know, how much can they be?"
Oh, good Lord!
I'm serious. That's what he's like. Just go and get them. How much can they be? It's worth it. You know, and I go and the guy's like, $994.
And for how many prescriptions was that?
It was for actually four.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, there were some that were more expensive than the others, but,
right.
you know, and so I'm kind of in my head juggling back and forth. Okay, which ones do I really need? Which ones are this? And I come home. I ended up that day not getting anything, but then I came home and I'm like, what am I going to do? You know, this is $900 just for the medication. And my friend in the meantime, who I've known almost my entire life, had been kept on telling me, you know, you should try this company. Go check them out. And I'm like, RxAid, which is, I thought, no, I don't think we'll even qualify. I said, you know, I we're not really destitute enough, or, you know, we're not.
Right.
We do have some income coming in, so it's not like we're totally without any income. And she said, no, I really think they can help. Okay, you know, at that point, $994, but I'll try just about anything I can.
I hear you, but it's also hard, I know. Like, I'm a pretty proud person, as I'm sure you are, just to, like, ask for that help, you know, because
absolutely.
you want to be able to afford your medication, you know, regardless.
Yeah.
I mean, even my insurance now, $100 for my medications. I mean, obviously not as much as yours, but that's a lot.
Yeah, and you know what? Even I find out that it's all relative because people are like, well, you know, my medications are actually $4,000 a month. I mean, whatever it is, I feel like it's too much.
Yes, you know, exactly.
Whatever it is, it's too much, and that money could be spent doing something else to, you know, with your family or paying off your bills or, you know, something else.
Well, you didn't have just $12,000 laying around that you could go, oh, well, just give me a year's worth of prescriptions.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah. I started to feel bad about that. So, and in the meantime, I had been applying by myself and to try and get the free programs. And so, now, mind you, I'm really not a technical person, so when it comes to like details and paperwork, really bad.
Well, some of these companies tend to put everything in legalese, so you try to read it and you're like, what?
Yeah.
You know, and it's almost like, and I'm not saying RX-8 is like this, but you know, I've seen some forums where it's like, do I need a lawyer to figure out what you're saying? You know.
Yes. Yeah, and I got really scared, too, because it was like, well, if I say this, are they going to come back and, you know, come get me? Is this going to be, you know, is the IRS going to come down? What's going to happen here? So I start getting really paranoid and scared. And when I contacted them, and then I talked to the owner, and because of the inner tough girls, I said, look, after I figured it out, I said, look, I think this is really something that can help, you know, a lot of people in my situation.
Right.
I'm like the perfect, like the poster child almost.
You are.
For, you know, how this whole thing's going to unravel. And, but yeah, it's not just cancer. They don't just do, you know, cancer drugs. They just do across the board. And so that's how that relationship kind of came to be about, because the more I talk to people like yourself too, is that you don't really want to feel like you're, you know, looking for a handout on anything.
Right.
You know, but at the same time, you still need some help.
Exactly. And I think for that, for me, that's the hardest. I mean, I have insurance and I still have bills, medical bills to pay. And some people, you know, as my fiance says, he's like, well, you know, you only owe like $25,000. There's a lot of people out there who owe a lot worse. And I'm like, I know, but I'm me. And this is, you know, I don't think about, oh, well, you know, Angela owes $1 million. I only owe 25. So, you know, boo hoo for her and yay for me. You know, I mean, I never, it's like we were talking to Donald Wilhelm last week. I never compare my cancer or my problems to other people because that just doesn't make any sense.
I know. I heard that too. I enjoyed him so much and he's such a great inspiration, but
he is.
It's funny. It's like, you never really look at it. It doesn't make you feel any better that somebody has, you know, a worse debt owed to somebody or a worse situation. You know, at least it doesn't for me. It's just one of those things where, it's all relative and it is what it is for myself.
And that's the other reason why I contacted you, is because I know that, you know, we have a good relationship via Facebook and we've talked before and text and on the phone and whatnot. And I like to find organizations like RXA that will not only help out cancer survivors and patients, but, you know, their friends as well and their family.
Well, yeah. And so the more I started to talk about it, there were friends of mine and family that really needed this too. And almost felt like it was a, you know, I don't want to get too dramatic and being like, oh, this is a moral obligation to share with people. But it is kind of when you know something that really is helpful. And so people were like, well, you know, why do they, there's things out there that won't charge you for, because they charge like a minimal monthly fee on their, you know, processing fee or whatever. And that's true. And I kind of tell people, for myself anyway, I don't file my own taxes. Like if I was good at those kind of things, I would do them.
Right.
I'm more than happy to pay the $12, whatever per prescription than $900 for, you know what I'm saying?
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
So, you know, when it comes down to it, you know, I'm more than happy to pay a nominal fee just so that I don't have to worry about it anymore. I don't want to have to keep on worrying about it month after month.
Right, because you don't want to go in, because I had a similar situation. I took these pills, Amend, which was for, I don't know if you had those for chemo.
Well,
I don't know how much they cost you, but without insurance, they were $1,000 for three pills. Mm-hmm. And I went up to the pharmacy counter and I was like, well, how much are these? And they didn't look at my insurance at the time. They're like, well, they're $1,000. And, you know, like totally straight face. And I was just, I almost like fell over in the drugstore.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, we haven't seen how much it is on insurance yet. And, you know, not to bag on the makers of Amend, but they didn't have samples. And I'm like, okay, well, they were $100 for three pills for me. I mean, what happens? And they didn't really do anything for me. But what happens to somebody who they really work for, and that's the only thing that helps with their nausea? What are they going to do if they don't have samples? And RxAid would be perfect to help them out.
Yes. I mean, on situations like that, you know, what I have really found, and to be, you know, open and honest with everybody, is that the sooner the better. Mm-hmm. So if I would have seen this coming, or if I would have been more proactive, and or let me rephrase and say swallow my pride a little bit sooner, ask for help sooner, I could have avoided a lot of the withdrawal symptoms that I was having from everything, because I was spreading it out. And so it is a process. I mean, it does take, there is an initial paperwork, and you have to, you know, it's a couple week process. So if you kind of foresee that, then ask for help sooner.
Can I ask what other medications you take?
I take an antidepressant that was originally, you know, prescribed for all the menopause symptoms. But to be quite honestly, I was depressed.
Yeah, me too. Do you take Effexor?
Yes.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's probably the drug of choice.
Because it's the one that doesn't interfere with tamoxifen if you're taking that.
Oh, see, I didn't know that part.
Yes.
But I think I felt like that was just like, let the oncologist, you know, all of a sudden, and especially being younger, if you have a hysterectomy and you're kind of ripping out that estrogen and all the other things that go along with it. And so when I started to see that coming off, and then some other things for the Epstein-Barr and the chronic Epstein-Barr, and just some other miscellaneous. But for those were the two major ones.
Right.
Was the Effexor. And
the Effexor for me is half of my four prescriptions that I take.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like, okay, that's the one that if I miss thyroid medication, yeah, I'll get tired. But, you know, that's not as expensive. But if you, like you said, if you get off antidepressants without your doctor's approval or even the wrong way, it's the side effects are awful, because I tried to get off them with my doctor's approval, and it was like, I'm on the air, and yeah, I'm either going to start crying or punch somebody in the face, so
yeah,
I'm going to stay on them. And it was really funny, because the nurse at the doctor's office, and I know them all so well now, they're like, do you want me to tell the doctor? Do you want to talk to the doctor? I'm like thinking, why? She's just going to say, good idea, stay on them. I mean,
well, I think that's pretty standard, though. You start feeling better, and, you know, in some cases, you're like, okay, you know, I think I want to do this. And, again, did not even realize or totally underestimated the effect of what that drug was actually doing for me.
Right.
But also I want to say, too, is that I really think nobody should do this involuntarily. So, I mean, coming off of your prescriptions because you want to is a totally different scenario than coming off them because you don't have the means to pay for them, or you don't know, or you don't have access to them anymore.
Right. Exactly.
And it's a very scary feeling, because prior to that, I wanted to come off of the Effexor and did the same thing that you did. I was like, you know, a week into it, I'm like, I don't think I'm going to be doing this. But the second time around, it was more involuntarily, as the medication wasn't available to me. So I was having to wean, you know, do every other day or whatever, which I don't recommend. I don't for anybody. Mm-hmm. It really made me feel added onto the stress of all of this. And when you're supposed to be kind of de-stressing and going into that. So luckily I got things under control and did ask for help, but it was a little tough there for a couple of weeks.
Yeah. And I hear you. And especially as far as like antidepressants, if I had asked, I wish if I could go back in time, the one thing besides not having cancer I would have changed is to ask for to be on antidepressants sooner.
So yeah,
it's another part of like, okay, well, you know, I'm stronger than this. Like you said, well, I'm done with cancer. I'm done with treatment. It's all over now. And then it's just like, okay, well, back to the real world. And everyone says, yeah, you look fantastic. You look great. And you're just like, is there someone else behind me? Because my hair is, you know, all gray. And, you know, everybody obviously is behind you, but you're just like, okay, well, I don't feel like me. I don't look like me. You know, I can't do the things that I used to do, you know, right now. I know I can in the future.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I said, if I had just gone and said, look, I need help. I mean, my doctor, who I, you know, saw a lot in the beginning, I didn't see her that much, obviously, past my treatment. She knows I'm always in a good mood, and she knew that something was wrong.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a real, and what I came to understand and realize, too, is that it's a real thing going on in your body. It's not something that you're making up or that mm-hmm. It's real. It is a real change in your chemistry of your body that happens after this whole process. And again, I underestimated it. If I say it once, I'd say it 1,000 times. I underestimated mm-hmm. the power of what all these things were actually doing, you know, and had actually happened, because like most women or most people, you get through, somebody tells you you have cancer, you get through that initial period and that time of what you need to do.
Right.
I mean, you get through it. You do what you have to do. And then after that, for me, it was kind of like this post-traumatic syndrome or stress that nobody really wanted, I guess, talk about at that point, or I don't know, maybe I was asking the right people. And there's certainly what I didn't find this online community like I did now, but
right.
So it was like, well, you should just be kind of grateful that you're here and that's true, but there I wasn't feeling like that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I hear you. With cancer, at least they know it's in the cells. And if they remove a lump or they remove your breast or they remove the lymph node, then they know they got it. And I think the hardest thing for me is it's like, okay, well, there's something going on in my head that's making me upset and I don't know why.
Yeah.
You know? And that's, to me, that's kind of difficult. It's, you know, I'm not a black and white person per se, but I, you know, if you go to me and say you have cancer, this is what we have to remove. This is what we need to do to make it better. And then, you know, theoretically, you'll be cancer-free for the rest of your life. Okay, well, you're depressed, but we don't know why, and there's a drug in there, and here's a pill that you can take that'll make you feel better. It's like, well, why? You mm-hmm. know?
Yeah, until somebody explains it and actually said, yeah, this is a real chemical process going on in your whole body.
Right.
Then I guess I had to get past my preconceptions of what that I should be or what I should look like or, you know, mm-hmm. blah, 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 of all of those after the fact of cancer. So I had to get past that personally
yes.
in order to really understand. I mean, a typical example is somebody was explaining the whole fiber issue to me. So I do want to say, too, that as during this whole process of not having the insurance and trying to find my way with the prescriptions and doing all these things in the last few months, I've really accessed my resources mm-hmm. for the local cancer community and just all of those things available to me that I never took advantage of before. So when there's nutrition counseling and at our healthcare center in town. And so I went finally, because before I always kind of thought, oh, it's pretty basic. Well, somebody mentioned how fiber takes estrogen out of the nutritionist, how fiber takes estrogen out of the body.
Right.
And that made sense to me to have more fiber in my diet.
Mm-hmm.
But until somebody explained it like that, I was like, oh, isn't fiber just for old people?
Yeah, exactly. I know that I think doctors, especially, they're so smart and they deal with so many people. And I had this with one of the nurses. I had an exam and they didn't tell me everything that was going on, but since they're so used to just saying, oh, well, this is your pelvic exam. Okay. Well, there was more to it than I was ready for. Let's just put it that way. And I went back to them and I said, you know, I'm the kind of person where I kind of need to know everything that's going to go on before I get there, especially if it's like a hospital where I'm not familiar with the people.
Right.
You know, and they're like, well, I said, anyone else, I don't mind. And, you know, she understood where I was coming from. So I think a lot of doctors just might just assumingly when they say, well, fiber is you need more fiber and they don't explain it, they just automatically think that you know why.
Yeah. Well, exactly. And really, there's a lot of things that I think we've become desensitized mm-hmm. to, even the word cancer or treatments. You know, I see people that are abusing their bodies, and I feel like, would they even do those things if they knew what cancer felt like?
Yeah.
If you knew what having to go through treatments and the after part and all those 3 years of living hell that I, you know, had experienced, and would you do the same thing? You know, would you, if somebody explained it like that to you, would you still be doing the same things? And maybe yes, maybe no, but, you know, just being able to not be so desensitized by treatment, chemotherapy, the words. I mean, we throw a lot of words around mm-hmm. and, you know, we kind of need to take a little further look into what they actually mean or feel like, just like menopause, when someone's like, oh, it's just menopause. You know? Well, yeah, for a lot of people, that can be difficult. It's a difficult process. So when somebody says, well, it throws you into early menopause, for some people, it's great. For other people, no problem, you know, whatever. But we're desensitized to a lot of things. So.
Well, I know that I get a lot of hot flashes, and I don't know if that's, well, that's because of the tamoxifen, but I'm also had my doctor check all my levels and everything and seeing if I'm going into early menopause. Last time they checked, I wasn't, but.
Well, and even then take into consideration then, so what menopause at that age does to you of the bone density.
Right.
So then take it a step further and, well, bone density is not that. Yeah, so somebody just, a friend of mine shared with me, her close friend has just had so many bone fractures and was in so much pain because of osteoporosis, because of an early onset of menopause.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So, yeah, you look at it like that. And it's a different take than just going through menopause.
Right. And I think the good thing about you and I is we'll find information. Like, I'll find things on Twitter and Facebook and repost it, you know, and I've learned a lot just from doing that and having people like you and different doctors on this podcast. Like, I had no idea about the BRCA gene like we were talking about before, about ovarian mm-hmm. cancer, until I had a doctor on, actually one of my local doctors here, who was talking about ovarian cancer. You know, so
it's a sharing of information, and the more just like my Pilates background of doing the when people have had surgeries and what scar tissue actually means and what having scar tissue, how that affects your life,
right.
And that, you know, it can really affect your inside, your organs. You know, people think it's just an outside thing, but again, it can really affect your organs. I mean, people don't realize that until somebody explains it to them.
Exactly.
So if I have some information that in any way can, you know, that next person down the road, I have a 17-year-old daughter. I want people to know. I want people to be aware, not maybe raise awareness of cancer. We all know that it's here. We all
we know.
Yeah, we don't need any more awareness of the cancer, but the things that file into it, the things that go into the awareness.
Right, exactly.
You know, the things that are going to make us successful in prevention of cancer and not just the detection part of it. So,
and I think the most important thing that we can get besides the information for RxAid and your information is don't be afraid to ask for help. Ask, you know, there's no, you know, there's a lot of embarrassing questions that you can ask your doctor, but you know, if you don't ask them, then your doctor will never know it, you know, if you need the help.
Yeah, and if you don't have that relationship with your doctor, you know, I can't, there's a community who cares. There's people who do actually care, and will, if they don't know the answer, they'll find
right.
at least direct you to somebody who might know, and you have to keep on asking the question.
Exactly.
Just fun, keep on looking and keep on asking people and keep on talking about it. And that's not to say that you want to keep on talking about your cancer. You know, I mean, right. it's just daily life. It's not like you want to keep on bringing this whole cancer issue and making it part of your, you know, so forefront in your being and in your life. But you have to get through it, and everybody's kind of going through that same process as you are, possibly. And you don't know that until you keep on asking. So keep asking the questions.
Exactly. So my question is, how can people get a hold of you, Angela?
Well, they can. Our website is ourlifeaftercancer.org, but we're also redoing the innertoughgirls.org, which is will be available within the next few days, which we're really excited about. Great group of people, again, community activists came together and kind of redesigned our innertoughgirls.org. So you can find us on Facebook. We're at The Tough Girl's Guide to Life After Cancer on Facebook, which is kind of long, but I think we're posted under your pages as well as reciprocal pages on the Cancer Warrior, too. So.
And RX Aid, how can we get a hold of them?
That's very easy. They're very accessible at rxaid.us.
Oh, easy.
And yeah, it's very easy, no long URLs. So, and, you know, you can either, they're very good in the office there. If you call and have questions or email and have questions, then they'll get back with you and then kind of lead you through the process. So, again, if you kind of have a foresight that that's coming sooner rather than later, don't let it get too late before you, you know, start asking for help.
Exactly. That's great advice. Well, I'm going to wrap up like I usually do. You can always find me on Facebook, Mel Majoros. You can become a fan of the show, The Cancer Warrior, on EmpowerRadio.com. Follow me on Twitter, at Mel Majoros. My blog, thecancerwarrior.blogspot.com. And you know what? Life looks pretty good from where I'm sitting. Sending you good vibes. It's The Cancer Warrior on EmpowerRadio.com.